Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the headlines, but who aren't necessarily politics experts. Sometimes it just feels like you need to be already some sort of current affairs wizard in order to just follow what they're talking about in the news. And inevitably that means, I think, that a massive chunk of society just end up feeling really left out. And I hate that this is a thing. So that's where I come in. I'm Julia Bell. And today, we've just got to get you squared away on what is a really important topic. It's upsetting, but my God, is it essential that you understand it. And this, of course, is the issue of a massively increasing number of people crossing the channel, often unsuccessfully and even fatally, between France and the UK. And it's predominantly this stretch of sea between sort of Calais on the north coast of France and Kent in the southeast of England. And I say it's increasing, I'm not kidding. In 2019, 1,835 people did it, approximately. And then that jumped to 8,461 in the year 2020. And then get this year, 2021, and we're still not at the end of the year yet, 25,776 people crossed the channel, according to the Home Office data. And again, like I say, that number may well and probably will go up. Now, that being said, I'll take a second just to offer a kind of gentle trigger warning, if you will, because, of course, we'll be talking about these events in more detail. And it's disturbing. It's disturbing, especially because it's happening right on our shores here in the UK. And I can't hide that reality when discussing this topic. So please do, I guess, bear that in mind when I'm going through it. Okay, so this has been an ongoing problem. I feel like everyone's heard of this, is people, you know, unsafely travelling across the English Channel, for years trying to get to the UK from France. It's an ongoing problem, an ongoing danger, where people have lost their lives attempting to make that trip, usually because they're doing it in these kind of completely inappropriate dinghies, essentially, is what they are. But like I say, it's flared up recently. Thursday, the 11th of November, is a day worth noting because we saw 1,185 crossings in a single day. In a single day. Now that number, as far as I'm aware, has never been recorded before for a single day. In previous years, it's taken the full year to get to that kind of number. But here we saw, you know, almost 1,200 in one day. And I can't stress enough that this route that they're taking is a shipping lane. I mean, one of those dinghies, one of those like ribs that you would ride for fun around a harbour or a seaside. I remember my dad and I did it in Ireland when I was a kid, and it was like the most fun ever. There was like five other people on this rib. You're sitting on the kind of inflatable bit on the side and you're holding onto a strap, like a bit of material. That is genuinely the calibre of some of these vessels that these people are taking all the way across the channel in really wintry and treacherous conditions. And now imagine not just that, but you're floating on one of these in winter at five times the capacity of what the boat can actually hold, whilst shipping containers the size of apartment blocks are overtaking you. So, I mean, in many ways, the 1,185 people who made that crossing on that one day, the 11th of November, were the lucky ones. It's a horrible thing to say, but frankly, it's true, because heartbreakingly, and also inevitably, some of these boats don't even make it. And of course, I'm sure you remember the stories flooding through on Wednesday, the 24th of November, about the boat that collapsed off the coast of northern France, where at least 27 people were reported to have drowned. And that's, again, a kind of record that we don't want to hear, because it's essentially the biggest loss of life from one event of a channel crossing, at least in our knowledge, in recent memory. Have a listen to the Prime Minister's initial response to that tragedy.
I just want to say that I'm shocked and appalled and deeply saddened by the loss of life at sea in the channel. My thoughts and sympathies are, first of all, with the victims and their families. And it's an appalling thing that they have suffered. But I also want to say that this disaster underscores how dangerous it is to cross the channel in this way. And it also shows how vital it is that we now step up our efforts to break the business model of the gangsters who are sending people to sea in this way. And that's why it's so important that we accelerate, if we possibly can, all the measures contained in our borders and nationalities bill, so that we distinguish between people who come here legally and people who come here illegally. Of course, we have to work with our French friends, with our European partners. And I say to our partners across the channel, now is the time for us all to step up, to work together, to do everything we can to break these gangs who are literally getting away with murder.
So that was Boris Johnson's initial statement about it. And you heard him there talk about the quote-unquote business model of these smugglers who are the ones that are organising and like operating these really, really dangerous trips and offering them to these sort of desperate people, a bit like a service in return for money. And we'll talk about that as well. And look, I've heard varying commentary on this. I know that it's quite a divisive issue, but I think anyone who's got a relatively human outlook on this can at least agree that anyone who chooses to make that journey is in some sort of desperate position. Bottom line, if you're making that choice, something is broken in your circumstances. And that will vary person to person, but if you're there to begin with, there's a serious issue. And that, as far as I'm concerned, requires empathy, regardless as to your politics on migration and on, you know, our responsibilities towards refugees. That's how I feel about that, bottom line. But the impossible thing about this is, while we can all agree something's broken, whose problem is it to fix it? And that's where the politics comes in. Because when things like this happen, you know, like this travesty where this boat collapsed off the north coast of France and 27 people were reported to have drowned at least, naturally, obviously the first port of call is to blame the smugglers, and that's what all the politicians did initially. But then beyond that, you've got the Brits saying to the French, right, you need to do more to arrest these smugglers and to stop people from attempting this trip. But then equally on the other side of things, you've got the French saying, well, hang on, you're the ones that are attracting people to migrate to the UK in the first place. You're the reason that this black market exists at all. They're taking these risks to get to you. So this is technically way more your responsibility than it is ours. That's a very, very rudimentary kind of outlook of some of the argument that's happening between us in the UK and the French. Obviously, the solution is to collaborate, obviously. But it seems that no one can quite agree on how that collaboration should work. And while we bicker with each other, an increasing number of people are taking their lives into their own hands and undergoing this perilous trip. Now, luckily, I managed to persuade Alex Morgan to talk me through the political side of things. He's incredibly busy, but I dragged him onto the podcast because he is the former senior correspondent at Euronews. He's now a very busy journalist doing all sorts of things, including for Times Radio. But he worked at Euronews for years, and that means that he lived out in France, reporting on French, European and British news. So he has that broad understanding of the relationship between us and our French neighbours, often the very tumultuous relationship. So he is going to help me get to the bottom of it. So a lot to get through. With that said, let's do that. Let's get into it. Make sure you're subscribed or that you've clicked follow if you're listening on Spotify so that you never miss an episode. Okay, a few questions, a few key questions to get through so that you're really clear. The first one is, why is this happening in the first place? Why are more and more people attempting this perilous trip across the channel? And there's a couple of initial obvious answers. So, for instance, if you're already in a desperate situation and you're wanting to get to the UK from France, just logistically, boats are the most viable option right now. That's kind of the bottom line of it, because smuggling people in planes is nigh on impossible. If you think about security and obviously how expensive flying is, but like even, you know, if you're a legitimate holiday maker, it can be hard to just have a smooth international trip by air. There's so many blocks and customs and processes. So that, although it happens, it's a really, really hard route to take. Then you've got road, you know, if you can go by road. And yes, smugglers used to operate quite commonly by basically hiding people in the back of lorries and in the back of trucks and driving them, you know, either through the Channel Tunnel or onto ferries, for example. But security is tighter that way, and increasingly so, because as we know, this government is very keen on clamping down on migration, both legal and illegal. And as you know, it's just common sense. It's easier to police borders on the roads than it is to police an entire stretch of beaches and seas between two countries. So that's the immediate reason why so many people opt for boats. And one might argue it's been kind of exacerbated this last couple of years because of the pandemic. And again, it's kind of common sense if you think about it, because, of course, hardly any flights were happening at all anyway. And those that were heavily scrutinised and very expensive, and there was lots of processes. Road travel as well, much sparser, you know, lots of border problems, even for people legitimately trying to take goods over between France and England. So if you add COVID into the mix, again, boats become even more of a default option for obvious reasons. And not to mention, right, so that's some of the obvious stuff. And then there's the people that are there to facilitate. As referenced by Boris Johnson, you have this network of smugglers who, or, you know, Boris Johnson calls them gangsters and criminals, who essentially run businesses, black market businesses. They have, you know, sophisticated setups and social media pages. They advertise their, I mean, quote unquote, services, essentially, to get people over here from France for a fee. And some of them are like, you know, multi-layered packages that you can buy, literally packages, where, so for instance, if you're trying to get from Turkey to the UK, then they charge you like $5,000 or $6,000, and they provide you with every leg of that journey, including the boat from France. Like, these are setups and services that you can pay for if you're in that position, which is mad to think about, but where there's an opportunity, people will jump on that, you know, to make money. It reminds me, I was reading an article on Sky News where they posted a screenshot of one of these Facebook ads that was posted by one of these smugglers. Shall I just get it up, actually, and describe it to you? Okay, yeah. So the article was published on the 25th of November, written by somebody called Sanya Burgess, who is the digital investigations journalist at Sky News. And let me describe this post. It's a Facebook post, and it's as blatant as, you know, if you're putting a Facebook post up to sell used garden furniture. There's no there's no fear in this post about it being illegal. It's not even referenced. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, let me just explain it to you. So it's got a picture of the Union flag, or the Union Jack, some people call it, you know, the red, white and blue flag. And then the post says, for those who want to travel abroad and don't want to experience any worries and fears and want to travel in a safe, legal and secure way to these countries. And then it's got UK 3 days, Ukraine 3 days, Croatia 3 days, Romania 3 days, Italy 3 days. Like, it gives you timelines and ways that you can do it. My goal is to get rid of you in the best, safest and easiest way. That's weirdly worded, isn't it? To get rid of you in the best way. For more information and prices, please inbox or contact via WhatsApp. Here's my phone number. I will serve you. And then there's the phone number. I mean, literally, like a price list. Or like a list of services on this, essentially a smuggling advert to get from various countries to, for example, the UK. And obviously, of course, there is criticism about, you know, what's Facebook doing? How much are they clamping down on this? And how much responsibility do they have to stop this kind of content? You know, it shouldn't just be up to governments and authorities when the hosting page for this sort of illegal activity seems to be very much on social media. Okay, so that covers some of the kind of immediate reasons why we're seeing this problem. So boats are the most viable option and they're very dangerous. And then we've got criminals seizing essentially what is an opportunity to make money where people are desperate. But when you're looking at this issue, you've got to look at the root causes as well. You know, it's not up to the criminals why the people are there in the first place. They're just taking advantage of a situation. People are sitting on a northern beach in France trying to get to the UK, predominantly because of what's happening in the countries from which they came, right? They've left something to get here. They're not just coming here for the sake of it, in most instances, I would imagine. And that is backed up by the stats. If you look at where the largest groups of these people crossing the channel originally came from, it starts to make sense. According to the BBC, at the end of last month, so at the end of November, 29% of these people were Iranian, 18% Iraqi, 9% Syrian, 8% Sudanese. You know, amongst these places, I think it is fair to say that people are known to suffer with poverty and corruption, human rights abuses, wars, bombs, incredible crime rates. These are issues that it's understandable that you'd want to flee from, you know, if this is something that you're encountering directly.
I come from Iran, Kurdistan, Iran.
Kurdistan, Iran?
Yes.
And why did you leave? What was the reason?
The politician, you know, they said to me, you must leave this country or it will kill you.
That was the voice of a man speaking to the BBC in Calais who, as you heard, had fled Iran. Now, I'm not saying everyone who attempts to cross the channel is a refugee by the official terminology. And by refugee, I mean someone who had literally no choice but to leave their country if they wanted to survive, be it because of a war or be it because they were being, you know, directly persecuted by the people in power. Now, naturally, a lot of the people who make this crossing are refugees by anyone's definition, because that explains the desperation for them to even want to make this kind of trip in the first place. But not all of them are. You know, by official standards, some would better be described as migrants. And that does differ from the term refugee insofar as it refers to someone who, you know, might not technically have had to have left their country. They might not have been forced to leave, but they felt they should, or they felt it was best to ensure they could maintain some sort of quality of life or to better their economic circumstances. And from our point of view, living in the UK, where there's, you know, the NHS, free education, a welfare system, we might look at their scenarios and say, well, how far are you off being a refugee, really? Because your scenario was so bad that you could argue you didn't have any choice anyway. You might not have been being persecuted, but you were leaving a situation that was pretty dire and may well have ended up in you dying anyway. So those words, refugee and migrant, they overlap, they blend, depending on who you ask is how, you know, different people might be defined. But I think it's important to say that not everyone who attempts to cross is, I suppose, technically speaking, a refugee. And now it's up to you whether that even matters. You know, I've heard a lot of commentary on this that says, well, it's our international duty to accept refugees, but we can't just accept anyone who wants to come here and make a better life for themselves. It's not our responsibility. If people are living in situations that are less than desirable, we just have the responsibility to take in the people who have no choice. So that's some people's arguments. Meanwhile, there's other people who say, well, you know, how bad is it if you're willing to get into a dinghy that's overcrowded and ill-equipped to make the trip? I mean, your situation must be so dire if you're in that kind of urgent position. So we really owe you asylum all the same. You know, it's a complicated debate. I mean, some people don't even think refugees deserve to come here. I'm not quite sure how that can be justified. But like I say, there's different viewpoints on this, and it's a complicated debate in itself. Even so, kind of regardless of where you sit on this, one of the most important questions, and it's something that you guys have been asking me on social media, is how come people who are already in France, which is technically a country that grants asylum and has a system that can offer a better life, why do these people take the risk to go from France to here? You know, why don't they stay in France? It's a great question. It's sadly not something that researchers have managed to get a huge amount of data on, so I can't just give you like a definitive reason. But again, I think this is a common sense thing. I think it's about what languages do these people speak? Where might they have friends and relatives living? And where does it, as far as they're concerned, where does it look like they could genuinely get a better life? So if English is a language that they speak, but they don't speak French, how much chance have they got of getting a job in France versus getting a job in the UK? These are things that they're going to be weighing up. And I'm, you know, I'm a British person. I'm proud to be. Can I understand why people would want to come here? Yes. You know, like I said, NHS, welfare system, job opportunities, free education with a very good schooling system in many places, a largely peaceful and tolerant society. Not always, but mostly. Am I crazy? Like, I would want to come here if I was leaving a place where I didn't feel safe, or if I was leaving a place that I didn't feel I had a dignified or comfortable life. I mean, of course people want to come here. And yes, the argument still remains, you know, well, France has a lot of these things, if not all of them. Again, I suppose you're entitled to that viewpoint, but surely it's, you know, it's individual cases. And again, like if people have family in Britain and they know that that family would support them in building a life, surely it's an option compared to staying in a country where they know nobody and they don't know the language, they don't know the culture. But not to mention, guys, it's not just the kind of what pulls them here. It's also the logistics. It's also the element that people are, when they're making this choice to come here, they're weighing up how good a chance they have of being granted asylum and being allowed to stay. And you might say, well, hang on, surely then the UK is not not the top choice in that respect, because we've just been through 4 years, maybe even more, of painful Brexit negotiations, which were spurred on by a demand for tighter immigration rules. Large chunks of the UK public very heavily voiced a preference to see less immigrants, less immigration, less people coming from abroad to stay here. And yeah, I get it that that might be felt, that it's the national attitude in many ways, but the facts don't particularly paint a picture of a country that bats people away who arrive on boats from the Channel. That's just the bottom line. You know, we might think that it's part of our policy, but what's the reality? Have a listen to this. I think it'll shock you. It's a kind of an exchange, a moment where the Labour MP, Yvette Cooper, who is also the chairman of the Home Affairs Committee, she was questioning Tom Persglove, who's a minister for the Home Office. And she asked him, what are the numbers? Give me the numbers of the people that are being allowed to stay versus the people that are being kicked out and being sent back to the country from which they, you know, tried to illegally come from. This is what was said.
Can you tell us how many asylum seekers or how many people arriving have been returned to any EU country in the course of the last year or since January?
In this year, it's five.
Five people this year. Five people this year who were sent back, who arrived from an EU country. So France included, right? And this topic is mainly about people coming from France. Five. So if you're in a position where you've come all the way from somewhere like Iran and you've been through literally thousands of miles, you've been through hellish experiences, you've been treated like shit at various points, you've had to sneak over borders and, you know, feel like you're on the run, feel like a literal fugitive for potentially months, maybe even years. And then you're told by a smuggler, well, listen, if you get to the UK, you'll probably get to stay because they hardly kick people back. It hardly ever happens. What are you going to do? Do you know what I mean? And if, again, you're in a position where you've got family here or you speak English already or you've got a network or some skills that you know, would be appreciated here, do the maths, you know? So hopefully this is all starting to make sense why so much of this is happening. Okay, so we've more than established the problem. I think we've got quite clear on that. You know, the UK, yes, it claims it wants to crack down on the number of people coming over the border, illegally or not. But for reasons mostly out of our government's control, that number of people who want to get here is increasing, especially when it comes to people who are coming from desperate circumstances. And while more people attempt to cross the Channel, it's just maths. There's more likelihood of fatalities. So something's got to give, or we are just going to end up in a cycle of devastation. And so that means that policies need to kick in. Solutions are needed. Now, there's a huge, obviously, you can imagine there's a huge array of different solutions offered by people depending on their politics. So the more left-leaning campaigners, for instance, who I follow on the likes of Instagram, are posting a lot at the moment about, you know, not only should we be offering these people shelter and support when they get here, we should actually be facilitating them coming here in the first place. You know, this black market for smugglers is always going to exist as long as there's an appetite to come here. There's always going to be an appetite to come here if there's atrocities happening abroad. So why not just make the smugglers redundant, make it safer, and just literally provide the transport ourselves and provide a route that is safe for people ourselves? I mean, you've got to love how idealistic that is. And I've got a soft spot for that point of view because it's a moral point of view more than it is a practical one. You know, we have this kind of deep humane responsibility to help anyone who's in dire circumstances to, you know, find safety and create a better life. And we're privileged, so why can't we do it? You know, I understand that point of view. However, practically speaking, logistically speaking, you have to ask the question, how would that work? How would that work? Especially when we've just had, you know, an outcry in this country amongst, yes, a slim majority, but a majority all the same, of people who don't particularly want to see migration in any form rising. So the political element is complicated, but also the logistics. Like, literally, how would that look? If you were to provide that transport, would that mean we would put resources into getting boats back and forth from the beaches in France to here? Do you not think somehow that would mean that the beaches would be completely full because word would spread that, oh, Britain are creating a pathway, let's go there? I can't imagine that being a hugely popular concept with the entire British public, not to mention, you know, in terms of the finances of it. And then if you were just going to do it for some and not for others, how would you process those people? If we were providing the routes, would we then, you know, look at their documents or look at their situations on the French beaches? And then we would get them on boats over to here. I mean, that would mean the French would have to allow us to have authorities on their turf. Literally none of this, practically speaking, is realistic in my mind. But thank God, I'm not the mind that's being put to this. And I'm not even smart enough to think of what some of the solutions to this might be. I have listened to people who are experts saying we do need some compromise. We need some way of safely offering passage for people who really need it to get to the UK. Because we can't just keep, you know, watching people make this perilous journey and then fishing them out of the water and getting them to safety. It's just, it's begging for, you know, tragedies to happen. So yeah, I mean, I'm getting into an argument with myself about this at this point. Like, that's how complicated it is. But that's at least one viewpoint that I've explored is, you know, should we actually actively offer a safe passage for these people? As you can imagine, the government really does not share that point of view. Quite the opposite, you might say. Have a listen to this. It's Priti Patel speaking in October about how she might approach this issue.
Boris and I have worked intensively with every institution with the responsibility to protect our borders to deliver operational solutions, including new sea tactics, which we are working to implement to turn back the boats.
Turn back the boats, she said. So not only should we try and, you know, obviously stop the issue, nip the issue in the bud and stop people from actually doing it, but even if they're already in the middle of the sea, rather than helping them into safer vessels and getting them onto shore, we should literally turn them around. Now, I mean, that was a particularly controversial concept and policy. I don't know if it's one that's seriously being explored, just because it would surely result in more problems, in boats capsizing and collapsing. Because remember, these boats are not equipped to make the trip, let alone, you know, do 180s and go all the way back. So it's received a lot of criticism, but at the same time, its supporters might argue it sends a hell of a message. You know, if these smugglers are getting people all the way to the shore of Dover and then they're getting turned around and sent back, it's even more perilous. Would it put some people off? I think potentially, but also people are so desperate. I mean, maybe they would take risks regardless. So hopefully you're starting to get a feel for the fact that there's just this vast array of political views on this, solutions on this. Obviously, there's simpler measures that have been taken that you would think would kind of contribute towards it. So one very simple solution is that you pretty much can't buy a dinghy or a kayak or a small boat on the north coast of France anymore. You know, where these operations are working, you'll go to a shop and you won't really be able to find a vessel to buy because the government and the shop owners are worried about who's buying them. But there's ways to get around it. You know, there's stories of these groups, these smugglers, bringing in dinghies from the likes of the Netherlands and Germany and, you know, blowing them up on the shore and what have you. There's ways around it. But these are smaller efforts. But it's not enough. What needs to happen is the UK and France need a plan to ensure that nobody else dies trying to do this. And it's not just for the benefit of the individuals making the trip, although I do think their dignity and human rights need to be taken into account, but it's also for the coast guards, like the British and the French coast guards, whose job it is every day is to get out of bed and hope that they're not going to have to, I hate to say it, but literally fish dead bodies out the water. And I genuinely want to protect their mental health at this point because they must be really distraught. Authorities, police, coast guards. So it's, you know, it's for everybody's benefit that we try to stop people doing this and dying, right? The way that it's currently working. So that is where the politics comes in. And that means, thank God, you're going to hear less from me because you're going to hear more from Alex Morgan, who, like I say, was the former senior correspondent at Euronews. His knowledge on this is second to none, and he kind of talked me through what can France and the UK do to come to a solution and how close are we to getting there. Have a listen. Hey, Alex, you okay?
Hey, Julia. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's been ages. Thanks for coming on.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me back.
How is the relationship currently between us here in the UK, specifically in Westminster, and France? How are we looking?
Do you know what? There's quite a few commentators who pointed out that it suits both sides for this to be a bit of a pantomime, in as far as we're best frenemies, and that plays into the French political narrative as much as it does the British one. So I would say at the moment, actually, a bit of clash with France allows Boris Johnson and the government to look like they're standing up for, you know, global Britain, red lines on migration, and for Emmanuel Macron and for France presently to be pushing back. Well, it's France, you know, asserting itself as not allowing breakaway Britain to get away with things. And it suits both sides very, very well for the domestic audience. Mm. But longer term, Julia, I think it's a very tricky situation. And caught in the middle of it are people in desperate situations who, whatever the legality of the crossing method they're making, are dying. And there's a humanitarian side to this now. And I think the UK and France, the rest of Europe will be looking on this as well. And there's pressure on France to engage in a dialogue with the UK. And I think you'll notice, for example, that there was a meeting of EU leaders on the migration crisis in the Channel, which Priti Patel was disinvited from. There was a sense that that was petty. And I think the European side would have put that on France as well.
But the pettiness from both sides. So just to cover off this story, because you're right, like when this came out, I thought, for fuck's sake, people are dying. Why are we arguing about this? So essentially, Boris Johnson published an open letter on Twitter to Emmanuel Macron. That's something that our politicians are obsessed with doing. It's like a very British thing. We love to like post an open letter. It makes us look busy and important. And it gives us publicity to our ideas, even if the recipient doesn't read it. But Boris Johnson published his letter, of course, knowing that Emmanuel Macron would read it. And it basically laid out all of his ideas for how they should curb this crisis. And it put a lot of onus onto France. Quelle surprise. It said, you guys could do this, this, and this, and that would really help. And Emmanuel Macron was deeply unimpressed that he essentially turned to Twitter. You know, why did you do this on Twitter? Why didn't you just send me the letter? And the quote was, we consider Boris Johnson's public letter unacceptable. As a consequence, Priti Patel is not invited anymore. It's so petty.
Yeah, at the core of this, Julie, as you pointed out, is something truly awful. I mean, truly awful. Like, whatever the politics, whatever the wider geopolitics, children, young people, be they men or women, drowning. So I think everybody, both sides, would acknowledge that is truly atrocious, and it shames both sides. It really does shame both sides. And I think that is a point of agreement. Their disagreement then comes from, how did we get there? The UK accuses France of effectively letting them, as in them being the migrants leaving from France, turning a blind eye, letting them through. The French, you've seen a number of lines of criticism. One, which is the UK is a very attractive place to come. You've seen the French accuse Britain of being too attractive and making itself too appealing, thereby incentivizing people to hope for the UK when they could have stayed somewhere else. I think it was a leaked letter from France, actually, suggested that the UK was too economically attractive for migrants, that there wasn't enough done to check people's backgrounds, et cetera, et cetera. Now, in one sense, maybe that is true, or maybe that's the view that people have of it. But ultimately, there'll be a lot of people in this country who would say it's still pretty difficult to turn up and the UK and start a life. So, you know, I just want to be very cautious about that line of argument. The other point, are they letting them through? Well, there's actually, you'll hear from charities in France, a lot of discussion of the methods of the French police. A lot of French charities criticize the French police for clearing the migrant camps on the kind of coast, taking away tents, taking away sleeping bags, so people can't stay on the coast. Now, quite where they go is another question, but there was a sense that the French have stamped down on the jungle, which was the name for the big migrant camp that they moved in, they cleared it. And so France will be saying, look, we're doing our best to move these people on so they're not on the coast, so they're not, you know, stone's throw from Britain, etc. I do feel that there is a sense that trust has broken down between both sides. The French don't trust the British and the British don't trust the French. Mm. And what's happening is in the middle of that, these crossings are illegal and there are people smuggling, gangs, at the center of it, and they're getting away with it.
Yeah. There was a deal struck in June between the UK and France where we said we're going to give you £54 million, which is 60 something million euros, isn't it, to help the French stop these boats from leaving your shores. Because obviously it's unfair that we're going to leave the European Union and say, right, stop. Can you stop the migrants coming to us, please? Because the French would go, no, we have no interest in your interests. So we've said, well, here's lots of money to help you do that. And essentially, the French are now saying, we're doing what we can with that money, but we are swamped and we're overwhelmed and our beaches are long and people, you know, our forces might be able to stop 3, 4, 5 boats leaving, but that sixth one or seventh one that's just along the way, we just simply don't have enough people to get there to stop it from happening. And those are the ones that are making it across the channel, sometimes not fatally and tragically. So our solution in response to that seems to be these days, okay, why don't we put our forces on your beaches? To which the French are quite plainly saying at the moment, no. So the French Prime Minister on Thursday said he, quote unquote, cannot accept the idea of UK police or soldiers, which kind of makes sense to me too, because we've left the EU. So having our presence on their coasts feels off. So I'm just trying to work out, like you said, that, you know, there's probably conversations happening behind the scenes. What might those solutions be? Because when I look at this problem, I cannot see answers. And so when politicians, populist politicians usually, turn to the UK public and say, we'll sort this, I think, how? Literally how? If you have the answers, please, God, tell us what they are.
I think, obviously, this is a reflection of the wider migration crisis. So these people reaching France are those who have passed up through Europe. And so there's a wider question of who is a refugee or an asylum seeker who urgently needs to be, you know, under international law, given, you know, safe passage, etc. Then the question comes, and who is here because they're an economic migrant? And if they're, and this is where the debate comes in, there'll be a lot of people who would not make the difference, but international law does make the difference. Mm. And therefore, I think that, you know, there are clear codes in place for the people who are fleeing persecution, fleeing war-torn countries, versus those who might be fleeing a very bad economic situation, but wouldn't necessarily be able to qualify as a refugee, for example.
Yeah.
I think, first of all, the international community needs to get clear on what to do with people who are moving from terrible countries, but are doing it, you know, they're not doing it the legal way. Because the reality is, no matter how bad the situation is somewhere, open borders walk in is never, that's not how the world works. It's not how nations work. You know, in a world where we have passports and border control and all of this, there's a need for that, which I think every government would agree. Nobody wants to have no control over who's arriving in their country. I mean, that quite simply, that nobody wants that. So I think the international community needs to get clear on, you know, who are these people? Who really should we be helping? And let's make sure there are routes available for these people that are clearly explained routes, so that people who really are, really, you know, refugees are not having to take these extreme measures.
Yeah.
Then what do you do with economic migrants? And I think this is where the European Union has in the past tried to ship these people back to where they've come from, back to their port of, you know, so they come from Libya, take them back to Libya. Then, of course, what you've had is effectively this outsourcing the problem all along the coast of Libya. Thousands of people in camps, some of them brought back from Europe. Then what? Well, it's over there. It's not our problem. So I think there's a wider question. What does the international community do with this massive displaced humanity?
Mm.
How do you make sure that those people, A, don't want to make the crossing in the first place? How can you stabilize tricky situations? B, what do you do if they've made that crossing and they don't qualify under, say, international law as a refugee or an asylum seeker? What do you do with them? Where do they go? So there's big questions there, which are not unilateral questions. That's not a nation state question. That is a geo sort of political question. That is an EU-wide question. And it's dogged the EU since 2015, since the migrant crisis. And the UK, while it's not part of the EU, but it's part of Europe. I mean, the big continent on our doorstep, you know, like it or not, we're part of it. So I think the conversations, you're right, are very difficult because the questions are very difficult. And so what solutions might they take? Potentially in the same way that the EU tried to find solutions to the situation in Mediterranean. So funding to support those countries dealing with the burden of it, plans to, you know, migrant processing centers, send people back who might not be eligible for. Now, none of this is without its critics, by the way. There are a lot of people who would say these are desperate people. All of them need help. So I don't want to be seen as defending any one position. I'm sort of just explaining how it might play.
Yeah.
But all in all, I think the reality is, longer term for this to be a solution, I think It will not be UK personnel in France. It won't be done. It would play terribly for both sides. It just wouldn't work. I think the reality is France will probably tighten up on its borders, and I think that will be the way it goes forward. Because I think
probably ask for a bit more money from us. Do you reckon?
I would think so. Yeah, and I think the UK will pay it.
Listen, I appreciate you.
Appreciate you too, mate.
That was Alex Morgan, genuine legend. He is so busy right now. He basically works every single day of the week, including weekends. And I forced him to come on this podcast on a Sunday evening. but I appreciate you, Alex. Thank you. I'll leave his Twitter and his Instagram in the description. Hopefully that painted a much better picture of why this issue is so tricky, both on a humanitarian level as well as on a political level. I mean, I hate thinking about the fact that politics comes into this because there's human lives at stake, but it does. It always does, especially when you're talking about a border between two countries, right? So something to chew over, something to think about, maybe kind of mull over where you land on this and what you think should be done. And let me tell you, there'll probably be a campaign group out there that will support that view because there's a position at every angle on this. Okay, I thank you for listening. I'll keep you posted how things progress. Hopefully they do progress. And I'll tell you what, lots of these aid agencies and charities who are purely just trying to protect people's lives, they're kind of mostly staying out of the politics and just trying to get these people help. They are, a lot of them, recruiting volunteers, it seems. I'm seeing a lot of adverts for that on my social media. So if you've been particularly affected by this topic, and if you're feeling helpless and you want to support, if you've got some time where you can take time away from your life and go and do that, I will leave some links under the episode about that for you to check it out. Okay, a heavy topic, but oh so important. I'm sending extra love because I know this time of year can be tough sometimes, but I've got your back. Any questions that you have in between episodes, you know what to do. Follow me and contact me on social media at @JuliaBell_X. Leave the podcast a review. It's easy to do on Apple Podcasts. Give it 5 stars and say something nice. It's the only way that people will discover me if it gets good reviews. So just take 2 seconds to do that. That'd be lovely. And finally, I'll mention, if you find this podcast helpful, please do become a patron. There's loads of bonus content on there for you to enjoy, and it helps keep this podcast going. So as always, the link is in the episode description as well. All right. Take care, everyone. Lots of love. Goodbye.